If you're a second-tier patron, you may have noticed an extra episode is up for you today. It's an update with the wonderful Alicia, who guested on the main podcast in August. She decided back then to talk publicly for the first time about the fact that she was sexually assaulted by a stranger when she was just 7 years old. We received so many messages for and about Alicia. We knew we had to talk to her again to see how she was traveling, so that is waiting especially for you. And we have our first free event coming up too. It's a walking tour of Pentridge Prison in Melbourne with a former guard. It's going to happen in January, and there'll be similar events in other cities. So thank you so much to our wonderful patrons. We can't wait to meet you. If you'd like to get in on the action, just go to patreon.com/austtruecrimepod. That's AUST True Crime Pod. The link is in the show notes and on our Facebook page. Please be advised this podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature. It's not appropriate for children.
The face of convicted rapist and murderer Francis John Wark will forever haunt the Dodd family. He was jailed for life yesterday for killing their 17-year-old daughter Hayley in rural Western Australia almost two decades ago.
We've already served 18 and a half years. He's only just gone to begin.
But Wark may have had other victims. Far North Queensland detectives are in Perth and want to speak to him about the disappearance and suspected murder of Katie O'Shea, who was last seen in Atherton in 2005.
We often talk on this show about the ripple effect of violent crime. And this case of the disappearance and suspected murder of a free-spirited mother of five is a classic example. Since her last known sighting a few days after Christmas in 2005, her family has splintered under the pressure of grieving, accusations, an inquest, and the realisation that there may have been a serial killer in their social circle.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Lily Parmenter joined us to talk about the disappearance of her mother, Katie O'Shea, and the many ways in which it's impacted her life, robbed her of family, and forced her to think the unthinkable.
Mum had gone up to Queensland. She's a Victorian. She was a Victorian resident. She'd gone up to Queensland. She'd flown up for the birth of her first grandchild.
So when was this?
That was December 17th, 2005.
2005, okay.
And she was thrilled about this grandchild. She was so excited. I still remember coming, like, she'd gone up there a few months earlier. She'd come back and we're going for a walk and she goes, "Can you keep a secret?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, I can't. I'm going to be a grandma.
I know, it's so exciting, isn't it, when there's a baby coming?
And I remember she looked at me and she goes, "When are you going to make me a grandma?" I said, "Mum, I'm 18. And she's like, "I
ease up, Mum.
16, not my problem." Yeah. Getting another one, don't be greedy.
Yeah. What was your mum's life like at that stage? What was going on in her life?
She was happy. Mm-hmm. She was very vivacious. She sort of marched to the beat of her own drum. She came from a really conservative Irish Catholic family and she just broke every mould. You know, five kids out of wedlock, big hippie. And she just, she had my older brother at 16 and, you know, she had five kids and she just, she lived for us, basically.
Oh, lovely. Was she in a relationship?
No.
Okay.
No. When she split with my dad, she was the first thing she said, like, "I'm never bringing another man home. You never know what kind of man that could be." And I, you know. So apparently she had a few boyfriends on the side, but none of us ever knew about it because she just didn't want to confuse things.
Yeah.
She was just devoted.
Like, was she a drinker? Was she a partier? Was she quiet?
Not necessarily a partier. She did love, she only drank one specific thing, which is Cooper Stout, the yellow brand, which is, to me, filth.
okay.
And that was all she ever drank because it had irons and B vitamins.
Yeah. Cute.
For her health.
For her health, yeah. Which sounds like a drinker like my father. Yeah. Yeah. Drinks stout for his health, yep.
Didn't drive. She got around everyone on a bike with, you know, a milk crate hockey strapped to the back of it, you know, Kinder Surprise things, like, you know, the Kinder Surprise toys that she'd super glued onto the handlebars.
Oh, and what a colourful character.
Yeah, you know, bouquets of flowers in her hair and, you know, she was just bright. She was colourful and bald one, we'll say.
Okay, well, you've got me Googling her now, and I'm looking at this this photo of her with this blue eyeliner and a beautiful cheeky smile. Oh, she looks gorgeous. She looks like a lady I'd...
She never wore makeup. That was the only thing she ever had was blue eyeshadow.
Oh, and she looks like a lady I'd get chatting to out in front of Coles.
She'd chat with you literally about anything.
Yeah. Oh, gorgeous. And so very, very excited about getting up there and meeting her new grandbaby.
Yeah.
So was that the last time you saw her?
The last time I saw her before she flew up, yeah.
Okay.
The night before she'd flown up, I'd given her a Christmas present, which was like a little... at the time I was a first year apprentice, so, you know, we got paid nothing.
Yes.
So it was just like a little crystal ball necklace-y type thing, and she, like, teared up. She's like, I love it so much. This is the most beautiful thing in the world. And then she went up to Queensland. Contact was a little bit sketchy because, A, she wasn't very good with the mobile. Useless with it.
Yeah.
I think she sent one text the entire time she had it, and it was literally "you're nuts," and she paid someone else to send it. She'd more often than not, she'd call you from a payphone. You'd be like, "Mum, why don't you have your phone?" She's like, "Oh, this thing."
Funny. She's the only living human still using a payphone at that stage. How old was she?
44.
44. So she's about my age, a little bit younger than me. Wow. Okay. So when was the last time you heard from her?
December 28th. Okay. She was shopping with a friend either in Atherton or Ravenshoe up north. And
it's around Cairns?
Yeah, about three and a half hours west of Cairns where me and my sister were born.
Mm-hmm.
I was 3 days after Christmas. And I remember she called and apologised for not calling over Christmas, no reception. And... and then as we said our goodbye, she goes, "Don't forget how much I love you and how proud of you I am." And then she was gone.
Mm. Okay. When did you find out she was missing or something was up?
It was the day of my niece's birth. I rang my brother and I said, "Well, did Mum cry more than your partner did in labour? Because she would have been absolutely useless." And he went, "She's not here." And so this was January the 11th. And I went, "What do you mean she's not there?" He goes, "Oh, I dropped her in Atherton. She wanted to go see a friend in Moriba." And I said, "Well, why don't you drop her there?" He goes, "Oh, she wanted to play some pool at the pub." And I thought, yeah, sounds bad, right? And I said, "Well, has she got her phone?" He goes, "No, she left it here once again." Seemed credible. And I said, "So what, no one's heard from her?" And he goes, "No." And I said, "Well, like, have you got her friend's number?" And he goes, "No." So I had to phone Tree around half of Queensland to finally get onto her. And I managed to get onto Mum's best friend. And she goes, "Look, I'm in the area anyway, so I'll go over and give her a visit." And I said, "Well, can you, like, get Mum to give me a call?" And she's like, "Yep, cool, no worries." About 10 minutes later, she called me and she goes, "Your Mum's not here." And I went, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, I've just spoken to the friend and she was never there." And so I rang my brother back and I said, "Well, where's Mum? Like, Mum's not there." And he goes, "Oh, I'm sure she's somewhere." I said, "No, there's something wrong. We've got to call the police." And he went, "No, she'll get upset." And I said, "I really don't care if she gets upset." So he bartered with me to wait an extra couple of days. During that time, I literally called everywhere. I called hair salons, bottle shops, the police lockup, hospitals, everywhere I could think of. And no one had seen her. And she was reported missing on January the 13th, 2006.
No, because she'd flown up there specifically to be with this baby and not been there for the birth of the baby. Now, by this stage, this is like a full sort of 12 or 13 days after you'd spoken to her last. When was the last time your brother reported having seen her?
December 29th.
Okay, so that's when he said that he had dropped her off to play pool.
Yeah. So there was a witness that said that he'd gone to school with my older brother and he said that he'd seen her in the bottle shop buying Cooper Stout. Mm-hmm. And it seemed credible because realistically no one really drinks stout. And he, you know, because he was in the same year level as my brother, he knew Mum from school events and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And he said that he remembered her and she may or may not have been speaking with two guys. One had a bald head and was wearing flannelette with a bit of a beard, and it was... At the inquest, it was like a few years after, like a year after the thing that he'd reported it. But the how it sort of led into Frank Walk is that he said it may have been him that he'd seen talking to Mum.
So who is Frank Walk? And why is Lily bringing up his name? Well, unfortunately, many of our listeners, particularly those of you from Western Australia, will recognise his name because he was sensationally convicted in January 2018 of the rape and murder of 17-year-old Hayley Dodd. Hayley disappeared while hitchhiking to a friend's place in Country WA in 1999. Already a convicted paedophile by then, Frank Walk lived in the vicinity of the last verified sighting of Hayley beside the highway at Badgingarra. But he was just one of dozens of persons of interest at the time, including his own housemate, another convicted paedophile. It wasn't until 2013 that a fresh set of eyes in the forensics lab in Perth noticed something no one else had ever seen. A small earring entwined in the fabric of a seat cover taken from the car Walk had been driving at the time of Hayley's disappearance. The ornate earring with the blue stone was a perfect match with the drawing Hayley's friend and travelling companion had done for police 14 years earlier when asked to detail what Hayley had been wearing when she last saw her. But even more damning was the testimony of a woman known in court proceedings as Mrs. M. Walk was by this time in jail for the rape of Mrs. M, and she testified that during the attack, Walk had demanded one of her earrings, telling her he liked to keep them. On the 22nd of January 2018, Justice Lindy Jenkins told her court that it was her sad and inescapable conclusion that Hayley Dodd was dead and that Walk was responsible. She found there was no reasonable possibility the earring found in his car belonged to anyone but Hayley, and she sentenced him to life with a minimum term of 21 years. The location of Hayley's remains is still unknown. So just to reiterate how we got here, according to the inquest, a bottle shop attendant in Atherton, in far north Queensland, believes he may have seen Lily's mum, Katie, in his bottle shop with two men, one of whom may have been convicted rapist and murderer Frank Walk, who was known to have been living in the area at the time.
He lived there in the same town that you were born in. Oh, so he was a local.
Yeah,
had become somewhat infamous over the years.
Yeah, it was kind of a really tiny little town anyway. Yeah. So there's probably about 250 people that live there.
Ooh. And he's an infamous rapist. Yes. And so people over the years
have... He had already been serving time for abduction and rape as well.
Oof,
during that time. So I'd actually looked him up online and I stupidly read his appeal for the original one he was in jail for in Queensland. So I knew everything that he did to this woman. So when he said Frank Walk, I died.
Yeah.
I still remember the night before I just had, like, I was hyperventilating. I couldn't breathe. It was just...
If we go back to when your mum was a missing person, just initially in the beginning, how everyone was reacting then and how the investigation sort of unfolded from there.
Yeah.
So you're 18. What were you an apprentice in, by the way?
Hairdressing.
God, okay, so you're so young, you're earning nothing, as we established, you know.
$5.50 an hour.
I know, babe. God, I remember my girlfriends who were apprentice hairdressers and working so hard on your feet all day with your little purple fingers, you know, from dye. And I remember.
God. At Chadston during Christmas trading hours.
Yes. Such a hard life as it is. And now you've got this incredibly stressful, traumatic situation unfolding so far away from where you live.
Well, I literally, when it all happened, my dad, my parents split up when I was 10. So dad was going to come down to Melbourne, I think mid sort of January to see the other kids. And mum was actually supposed to be back by this point. She was supposed to be spending a month up there. And when she'd missed her flight, she was reported missing 13th. Friday the 13th, that's how I remember.
January,
So she was due to fly back 4 days after that for her brother's wedding and she missed her flight. There was the only sort of transactions were on her bank book because she didn't have enough postcard on the day she went missing. So there was no activity since then. CCTV footage, there was nothing. I rang my dad during that time, and I said, look, there's something wrong. I don't know where Mum is. And Dad was living in Emerald in Queensland at the time, and he said, okay, well, I need you to come up here. And I said, well, I can't. I've got work. And he goes, I don't care about your work. Your bosses will understand. You need to get up here and be with the family. So I pretty much just rang my boss and went, I can't. I need some time. I don't know when I'm coming back. And thankfully they were good enough to go, okay, take your time. And I flew up to Emerald, and then we drove pretty much 18, 19 hours solid to get from Emerald to Ravenshoe, where my older brother was, and take care of the kids. So during that time, my brother was obviously dealing with the birth of his baby. So I was pretty much pushed into taking, like, dealing with the police, dealing with reporters, everything like that, and taking care of everyone else. And I was up there for 3.5 weeks. We put posters up. I did, you know, news stories. I was down at the police station probably every second day. And yeah.
Do you remember at what point it turned into a murder investigation?
To be honest, I think the police may have already been looking at it being a murder investigation, but for, you know, because I was 19, I'm still a baby, and I, for some stupid reason, I thought maybe she'd just run off. And so it took me a good 18 months, and it wasn't until a friend of mine sat me down and went, you know your mum wouldn't be here. You know your mum would be here now. Mm. And
I think they're two different things. When the police decide it's a murder and when you decide it's a murder would be two very different things.
And often people, we've spoken to, you know, families before who've had a loved one go missing, presumed murdered, and I think their mind just can't go to that place. So they think, yeah, maybe they'll come back, or something must have been wrong, of course,
I wonder, have you listened to the Teacher's Pet podcast?
I've started listening to it.
It might be too close to home. I don't know. It might be triggering. Is it triggering?
To be honest, I'm not desensitized. I'm kind of just, I think I've surrounded myself with so many stories that I'm sort of.
There's so many people who've mentioned to me, I don't want to ruin it for you, but there's so many people who've mentioned to me the moment where Lynn's father's funeral. Is where
I haven't gotten up to. Yeah, sorry. I'm all for spoilers.
Okay, this is the moment where her mum accepted she was dead.
Yeah,
because, and it was years after she disappeared, and years after everyone else accepted she was dead, and her mum was sitting in the church, and she kept looking at the door because that was the moment where she thought, if Lynn was alive, she would come to this.
Yeah,
and it's heartbreaking. So many women have mentioned that to me and said that was the moment for them that just broke their hearts, you know. So I can understand that there'd be a moment for probably everyone in your family that said to them, she'd be here for this.
Yeah.
Oh, she would have been there for the birth. There's no.
You're right, absolutely. Yeah, a couple of days later, yeah.
And her brother's wedding and you know, everything like that. And yeah, so weeks turned into months, and then months turned into years. And
so how did you cope with that 18 months later when that was your moment, when your friend had to sit you down and look you in the eye and say, babe?
It was actually Gary Adams' mum that said it to me. Do you remember in Oakley a few years ago they found the remains or partial remains of a 17-year-old boy that had been missing?
Yes.
His mum.
Yeah, so Gary was he'd gone missing from his house at Cranbourne. And one of the things that was really suspicious is he used to take his backpack everywhere, like everywhere.
Backpack and bicycle.
And they were there at the house and Gary was gone.
And there was a tape set to – he had a TV with his VCR in his room.
Yeah.
And that was fast-forwarded to the end as well, so it looked like he just left.
Mm.
And, yeah, he was 17. He was missing for 8 or 9 years or something like that. And
did you know her through a missing persons kind of network?
Yeah, Joe and I had actually became really close. Yeah. So she sort of – I'm her, like, because she's around about the same age Mum would be, and I'm the same age as Gary. So she surrogately tries to ground me sometimes.
Yeah. I met Jo once through Janine Greening, who's been one of our guests, you know, through that Victims of Crime Network. Yeah, she's a strong lady. Yeah.
And so she sat you down.
Yeah, she said to me, I don't remember exactly what she said, but it was basically, you know, your mum would be here. She wouldn't leave you.
Wow.
And that was pretty much the straw that broke the camel's back.
Gosh, that's amazing. So she wanted to help you sort of start the next phase of dealing with it.
because I'd originally, to deal with it, I guess I kind of needed an outlet. So I started looking around a lot of victim, like a lot of websites, and yeah. So I came across, I think it was the Missing Persons Register, and I got in contact with her, and she put me in contact with Joe. And I'd started actually, I'd taken myself to counselling, so I was going to counselling once a week for probably about a year and a half, mm-hmm. and I loved that because I could just talk. Mm. And you know, in my everyday life, I had to sort of, hi, how are you going? Nothing's wrong.
You're a hairdresser, darling.
Yeah, it's my hairdressing voice.
I know, that's what you people do. You're amazing at that. Yeah.
And you listen a lot to people.
Yeah.
I couldn't fall apart.
Yeah.
And because I had to be, I guess, there for everyone else as well. So it's because my brother had never sort of stepped up and spoken to the police or done anything like that. So it was still me handling media, police, everything. So I started seeing a counsellor, and then I went every fortnight, and then, you know, it's sort of every time I felt like it was getting bad, I'd start going once a week. I stopped when she got pregnant.
Your counsellor did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloody selfish.
I know.
What about me?
I know. How good is counselling though? Seriously, how good is it?
I can't recommend it enough. Yeah. Like it's one whole hour a week, and just, you don't have to. You don't have to sound selfish. Yep. You can just talk about yourself.
Yeah, you're so right. You never have to ask them, how about you? How are you going though? Yeah. You know, you never ever, and you never have to worry about hurting their feelings or you can just
Honest. You can just unload.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go, oh my God, I'm sorry I said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, never have to be embarrassed.
After the break, we fast forward to the inquest and the shocking evidence that haunts Lily's family still. Coming up on Australian True Crime, we hear about the many ways in which Lily's daily life is affected by the loss of her mum. But first, to the inquest and the shocking evidence of Mr. A.
Inquest was...
Because I know the journey to...
4 years ago.
How many? Four?
4 years ago now.
I know the journey to inquest is its own life, you know. Were you the person who pushed for an inquest?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's its whole own thing, isn't it?
And that's also... I guess for family members as well, it's sort of accepting that inquests usually happen when they believe there has been a death.
Yes.
Mm. So,
and that's when you are saying to the police, "I want answers."
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going away.
Yes.
I'm quite tenacious when it comes to my poor detective. He'll tell you.
Yes.
And yeah, so the inquest was in Cairns. I think it was the day after Mother's Day, actually.
2014.
I mean, could you explain to us and to listeners, I guess, what is the purpose of an inquest? Why does an inquest happen? Because it feels like, you know, if the detectives haven't been able to, if the investigation hasn't been able to unearth resolution, how can an inquest do that? What's the difference? What does it do?
An inquest is basically when the police have sort of, I guess, reached a point where they can't, like, of their information gathering, and there's no sort of further answers. They put it forward in a brief and they send it to a coroner.
And what can the coroner do that the police can't?
The coroner can call witnesses.
Can the coroner force people to... speak where the police can't? Is that how it works?
They can actually, in the case of my family, there was a family member who was actually, there was a nationwide warrant out for his arrest because he hadn't shown up for the inquest after he was petitioned.
Right.
They can call witnesses, they can, you know, place warrants, everything like that. So there's usually a coroner, I think she was a magistrate, sitting at the bench, and then there's a counsel assist. So she was basically speaking on behalf of the coroner. So they ask questions, they go through statements, and then at the end of it all, they basically they release a submission, and the submission is whether or not it was ruled a suicide, whether or not it was if there was a person of interest, they can name them.
Mm.
That person can't, because inquests are actually a civil matter, they can't be criminally charged, but they can name them as a person of interest, which therefore leads the police where they need to go from there. So there was a family member who was a person of interest who has never spoken to the police. I had advocated for this family member because I honestly didn't think that they had it in them to hurt my mum.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a convicted rapist and murderer, Frank Walk, who is now serving jail time.
And at the time of the inquest, it wasn't known that Frank Walk had murdered Hayley Dodd. So
he was a person of interest in Hayley's, so they had police from WA actually at the inquest as well.
So he had been named as a person of interest in Hayley Dodd's murder, but he hadn't been charged or convicted yet.
He was serving time during that time, so it's all very convoluted and interlocked. He was serving time for the abduction and rape of a local woman.
Okay, now I'm going to beep the name out.
Yeah.
But the family member.
Yeah.
Is a.
Yeah.
When did he stop speaking to police? Did he speak to police initially?
They have a transcript of a conversation, a transcript of a verbal statement, but that's it.
From the time?
Yeah.
And then never again?
Spoken to them again. The detective, Brett Devine, had actually flown from to speak to him, and he basically got told to get effed.
So what has he said to you about it?
Nothing really. He basically said, I hadn't seen her. I don't know what happened. This. And we sort of fell out of contact a long time ago. Just he started drinking and lots of, bad stuff. And I just went, I can't deal with this in my life now. I haven't really spoken to him since. I tried to actually get him to speak at the inquest, and I was told to get effed. Other family members have tried to get him to speak and get told to get effed, and
it's so obviously so hard and awful to contemplate that it's a possibility.
Well, the other thing as well is because Walk was known to the family member as well.
Okay.
They lived 5-minute drive. They had associations. I think he'd been to his house a few times. So the other thing that sort of points me in the direction of Walk being the potential would be if I know that there had been a party or gathering for Mum when she found out that, she's going to grandma. And because he had associations, he may have been at that party, but I can't get straight answers from bloody anyone. I have spoken to a couple of Mum's friends, and they said, I didn't see him there, but we weren't there for that long.
What happens when there's a warrant out for an arrest in an inquest like that and the person still doesn't show up? Whatever happens?
They gave it a month. So in between May and June, they gave it a month for him to come forward. And he never did. During that time, there were numerous attempts to locate him, and he evaded. Every contact that I had tried to make, I got told to get fucked. Mm-hmm. Other family members had tried, got told to get fucked. And then the coroner said, "Well, there's only been a month. I've got to make my submission." So we made the submissions, and she gave her summary. So. Because during that time as well, one of the witnesses had actually was an ex-acquaintance of his, and he'd said that during the time that he was staying with him, there were two occasions. One was, I killed her, don't you? And the other one was something like the police got called to their house, and it was something like he was walking around the side of the house, and he'd overheard two family members talking. We could just dig it up. Wouldn't it be decomposed by now?
We've since located a copy of the coroner's report, which was handed down by Coroner Jane Bentley in Cairns on the 12th of June 2014. The witness Lily is referring to here testified that in 2007, the man in question told him, I killed, don't you? But he thought he was just trying to scare him, and he didn't believe the man had, in fact, killed Katie O'Shea. He also said that a few days later, he'd heard the man and another relative saying they could, quote, just dig it up. And when he asked what they were talking about, they said it was an amount of pot they'd buried, but it would be decomposed by now. In her comments, the coroner said that while she believed Mr. A was an impressive witness and that the conversations had occurred, she could not be certain of their meaning. In summing up, her findings were as follows. I am satisfied that Ms. O'Shea was last seen by the bottle shop attendant in the bottle shop of the Atherton Hotel that evening. She left there in the company of two men. I find that Ms. O'Shea is deceased, and she died soon after the 29th of December 2005 in the area of the Tablelands in far north Queensland. The cause of her death cannot be determined, but it is most likely that an unknown person or persons with whom she came in contact either at the Atherton Hotel or soon after she left there caused her death and disposed of her body.
Obviously, the DPP has decided they don't have enough evidence to charge.
There's not enough evidence to charge anyone. I'm really, like, I still remember one thing my other half had got, because when we first got together, when the dinosaurs died, we were driving interstate because his brother does sound technician, lighting technician. He does all the big events, like the bush doofs or whatever they're called. And so he needed a driving partner. I don't drive, but I'm pretty good at entertainment. So like a 10-hour drive both ways. So I was telling him stories about my parents and stuff like that, and I still remember he looked at me and he goes, you're so lucky. And I said, why? He goes, because you know your parents. You know what they were like before they were mum and dad. And he's like, a lot of people don't have that. I'm really lucky that my, you know, mum was amazing, like, and my dad's amazing too. Like, there's nothing that they wouldn't do for us. I feel like I just need her to be remembered, and for as long as I keep advocating for it. Like, I'm now in my 30s. I've gone through all of my 20s. I don't know what life's like not with my mum.
Yeah.
So I guess even if I never get answers, my own form of revenge would be at least that bastard's looking over their shoulder for the rest of their life, wondering if this is the day they get done. And I'm not going to let them forget about mum. I'm not going to let anyone.
Have you had kids?
I don't want kids now.
You don't want?
Why not?
No, I just, I guess, I've back before, mum, I would have loved to have had kids, but I just don't think that, what's the point bringing them into something, like bringing something into this world that's just where life's so cruel, when someone can get taken so fast. And I also don't want to have to sit there and go, well, grandma was, we don't know. Mm. Like, I don't want kids now. So they've not only destroyed my mum, they've pretty much destroyed another generation.
That's a ripple effect we always talk about on this podcast.
You can show your support for Lily Parmenter by liking the Facebook page she runs in honour of her mum, Katie. It's called Justice for Katie O'Shea, and we have a link on our Facebook and Patreon pages. Frank Walk is currently appealing his conviction for the rape and murder of Hayley Dodd.